This is Radioactive, an environmental and social justice news journal for January 9th, 2020. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Yesterday, Maine's Land Use Planning Commission, LUPC, voted 5-2 to approve the site law certification for Central Maine Power's highly controversial New England Energy Connect corridor project. The project now goes to the Department of Environmental Protection. Today we hear from some of yesterday's LUPC meeting and an interview with LUPC Regional Supervisor Bill Hinkle. And we look at community efforts to reform Maine's waste law at the legislative and agency levels. Yesterday, the Maine Land Use Planning Commission followed their staff's recommendations to approve the site law certification required for Central Maine Power's corridor project to progress. The so-called New England Clean Energy Connect power line corridor is designed to bring electricity from Hydro-Quebec dams in Canada through Maine to be used by the state of Massachusetts. There has been widespread opposition by local towns and others concerned with local impacts traded for corporate and out-of-state profit, environmental degradation, and the destructive impacts to First Nations peoples and their land and water within Canada. Before yesterday's vote, some Land Use Policy Commission members expressed their dissatisfaction with the project and the pressure their commission received from Central Maine Power to accelerate their process. It also noted that CMP had previously said that changes to the project's path due to environmental impacts on Beatty Pond could not be done until it was clear that approval of the project would be contingent, and quickly they switched to the so-called Merrill Strip alternative. Commissioners also expressed concerns at the amount of vegetative buffers that would shield the transmission lines from the public, including where the line would cross the Kennebec River and the Appalachian Trail. Regardless, all but two members followed staff recommendations that the project still met the criteria for their approval. We hear comments from Betsy Fitzgerald and Jay May, who both voted to approve the project, and Commissioner Bill Gilmore, who was one of the two to vote against the project, along with Millard Billings.
Betsy?
Comment. Before we vote, I guess from my perspective, all 750,000 pages that I read and emails and everything else, to commend Bill for keeping at least me straight and so I could follow along. And I appreciate it. And I'm sure, you know, my thanks to staff as well.
Any other comments? Jim?
Well, I just feel that I've thought about it a lot, and I do intend to vote for this, in favor of the staff's recommendation. And I'm feeling that way, or going to vote that way, because of what you mentioned before. This decision has to be made based on the statute and the regulations that we're working on. If I was to vote strictly on my emotions, I might not be so in favor of this. I was a little bit taken back by CMP's change of heart with regard to the Merrill Strip crossing. They told us that was an expensive deal, and the owner wanted 50 times what the land was worth and so forth. And then when they found out there was going to be an issue with crossing the PRR at Beatty Pond, they almost immediately found a way to fly that strip across, or fly the right of way across the Merrill Strip. So anyway, and then they tried to put pressure on us to make a decision before we were ready. And I've just not been happy with some of that.
Any other comments, Bill?
Can I have a couple of minutes?
Sure.
Thank you, Jim. First of all, I want to say that I have the utmost respect for each and every one of you members that sat at this table with me. I always have, and I will continue to, once this vote has been taken, as well as the members of our staff who worked very hard to put this together. I appreciate it. But I do have some concerns. And I understand that our responsibility solely is to speak to the three provisions as laid out before us in the PRR district, where there's a special exception clause. I understand that. I know that I can't talk about moving around the target from one transmission line to another because something didn't work financially. I know that I can't talk about why we couldn't buy this piece of land because somebody wanted way much more money for it than what we thought it was worth. I can't talk about the potential issues of where the jobs in the state of Maine go coming forward should this come to pass. And there's a lot of things that I can't talk to. I'd like to talk about a lot of the things that the people in their own backyards believe is a special place to them, and this is going to have some detrimental take on it. I understand that. I'm not going to talk about it. My decision won't be based on those things. But when I look at what's gone on over time, I look at this transmission line that was proposed, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that CMP went to the state of Massachusetts and asked if they was interested in having a power line put in. And that's not the correct verbiage, but needless to say, they came up with a number that the state of Massachusetts was comfortable with. I know it has nothing to do with our vote, but it's on my mind. I've laid awake way too many nights thinking about it. And if that's the case, and a number was reached, and a corridor was purchased prior to, and I'm gonna ask you a question specifically, Bill, was there any discussion about the three districts, or now two districts, that this power line is proposed to be constructed in? Was there ever any discussion with staff about the special exception provision and what effect it may or may not have on our decision?
So prior to the submission of CMP's applications to the Maine Department of Environmental Protection, who in turn asked us to do the site law certification review, the Land Use Planning Commission was not involved in any discussions about the proposed project.
Well, if that's the case, then seems like a pretty brazen move to step out and buy a corridor to the length that you bought, assuming that this group of nine individuals would make a decision based on whether or not it was a prudent thing to do. That frustrates me immensely, and I'll tell you, it's not a good thing in my mind. I know I'm not voting on what was on the table for the fee. I don't care about that. I'm a strong proponent of hydropower. I think that we've failed ourselves greatly through the years by not having kept the dams in place that we've had in this state. Shame on us. But I've made those comments before. But if the shoe was on the other foot, would the state of Massachusetts do the same thing for us? I doubt not. They certainly didn't do it with natural gas. Again, I'm not taking that into consideration when I vote for it. I look at this line and where it's run. I just happen to know about some of the proposals that was on the table before. I think there was a better route to have taken, probably a cheaper route to have taken, and certainly less threatening damage crossing the river with a direct drill underground pipeline, or sleeve at least for your cables. Would we do that same thing if there was a proposal setting before us today by an oil company that wanted to send high-pressure oil under that river? Would we allow a directional bore under that very river and let that happen? Because once we take this step, we've set a precedent, I think. I think our responsibility as commissioners, not just this one, but the commission before us, was pretty well directed to us. And I think we spent a lot of time and effort in putting together a document to protect the most vast and protected piece of the Northwoods on the East Coast, east of the Mississippi, no two ways about it. And every time we fragment that with whatever it may be, we run ourselves a risk of, okay, what's the next guy on the steps gonna be asking for when he knocks on the door? That makes me nervous. And when I look at this and I think about the cost and I think about the benefits, I hear the stories about Iberdrola proposing to build offshore wind farms now off the coast of Massachusetts. They've got 250 miles of coastline down there. Our own state of Maine University has developed through the years with funding from the federal government and the state of Maine to design and build tidal power turbines. The tide ebbs and flows twice every day up and down that coastline, as it does ours. But we continue, in my opinion, to run the risk and take away the natural qualities of the Maine backwoods and doing things that I don't think are necessarily right. And so, once again, I respect you folks. I appreciate how you vote. I hope you appreciate how I vote. I will not be voting in favor of this, based on the fact that I don't believe that proposal that's been sent to us couldn't have been addressed in a more financially sound manner, and there couldn't have been other routes taken, especially down next to the river, and avoided that crossing. this country up in my neck of the woods, and I'm not going to try to bring them into the debate, but I know there was discussion, and I know one side or the other chose not to do it, but it would have been a much better route. But I don't believe in it for the very reasons I've stated. I will say no more. I wish you well, and I'll love you all when we're done.
Anyone else want to make any comments? Have any questions? If not, all those in favor of the motion. All those opposed. It's 5-2. The motion carries. And with that, I'm going to take a 5-minute break.
And you are listening to Radioactive on WERU Radio. Yesterday, Maine's Land Use Planning Commission voted 5-2 to approve the site law certification for Central Maine Power's highly controversial New England Energy Connect Corridor project. We spoke after the vote with LUPC Regional Staff Supervisor Bill Hinkle, who prepared the report recommending the LUPC approval.
My name is Bill Hinkle. I am staff with the Land Use Planning Commission. And so the commission just voted to find that the site law certification meets the requirements that it needs to in order to finalize that decision. That this decision will now be given to the Maine Department of Environmental Protection, and they will incorporate that into the findings and conclusions of their site law of location development permit.
Now, is there some other public process that needs to go through, or the DEP is just receiving your recommendations and making their decision devoid of any other public process?
So the department's decision will, there will be a draft decision document that is provided for public comment, and then it will also include the findings that the commission just made here today.
Okay. So there will be a public hearing?
There will be a document that's provided to the public, but the hearings are concluded and the record's closed.
What about the Army Corps of Engineers and their decision on whether to require an environmental impact statement? Are you aware of the updates on that?
I'm not. You would have to consult Jay Clement at the Army Corps.
Okay, but yeah. That's a possible other hoop to jump through.
There is approvals required from the Army Corps of Engineers, and that has not been concluded yet, so there's still some process going on there.
Okay, anything else at the state level, or is this it?
After the DEP's decision, that would be it from the state, as far as I'm aware.
Okay. And so then, were there any other federal processes that need to take place besides the Army Corps of Engineers?
So I guess I'll just caveat this with it. I'm not a lawyer, so
Sure.
But as far as I know, the Army Corps of Engineers would need to issue their decision, and then there would be a presidential permit required at the federal level.
Okay. And then we're also looking forward to a possibility that this will go to referendum. There's a campaign right now to put it on the ballot.
Right. Correct. And that doesn't have anything to do with the administrative process, but that is something else that's working, in the background here
right,
on this.
That
project.
Could affect the project.
Right.
And can you just quickly synopsize, you brought up a number of points of concern that the LUPC saw within their purview that they had to consider, but it was your recommendation that based on the statute of the LUPC that you couldn't prevent it from going forward.
Right, so there are specific statutory and regulatory criteria that the commission must apply in any decision, and you take into consideration all of the evidence, and some of that evidence speaks in favor of the project, and some of that evidence speaks, not in favor of the project. But on balance, what the commission decided is that there's sufficient evidence that the criteria are met, and that's where they went with their vote in deciding that the certification is approved.
As a witness and as a presenter and staff, can you speak a little bit to the tension that we heard from some of the LUPC today with their concerns over environmental impacts, that they still had the caveat that they didn't see that there was necessarily something within the statute that could address their environmental concerns, the concerns about environmental impacts, and also about the pressure that CMP had exerted on this body to make a decision?
I think, the commission's comprised of, it's a citizen board, and so these are folks who live in the communities and represent these communities, and clearly there's been, a lot of public involvement and comment, and so I think what the commission was indicating
and opposition
to
be very clear,
sure.
This is highly contentious. There's been a lot of town opposition and passages.
And I think some of what we heard in there was an awareness and acknowledgement of that opposition and some of the emotion out there, but that the commission had a charge to evaluate the project based on the criteria and sort of lay aside the emotional considerations in reaching its decision.
What has your communication as staff been with Central Maine Power?
I've been a project analyst with this for 2.5 years almost, and you know, so I communicate regularly with the applicant as well as other parties, the public, to receive information and also request, you know, information when that's necessary and appropriate.
Again, going on what I heard up there about the pressure on the LUPC, have you personally felt pressure from CMP to move along quicker than to move quicker to make a decision or come to a favorable decision for CMP?
I would say that it's been a very fair and good process. We've taken our time to thoroughly review submissions to ensure that they're complete and thorough. CMP is responsive to the requests that were made by the commission. And ultimately, we close the record with a voluminous amount of information to consider, so I think it was a very fair and objective process.
Okay, but my question was also, did you feel pressure from CMP?
I did not feel pressure.
You made reference to herbicides and pesticides. We just wanted to ask a question about that. It was stated that herbicide and pesticide would not be used at all to maintain the CMP corridor. Are we hearing that correctly?
So in segment one, which is the new segment where there is not an existing corridor, CMP is committed to not using herbicides in that stretch of the proposed line.
Okay, and correct. What can you specify again what that area is and what length?
So
that's
that's a 53.5-mile long segment from the Canadian border at Beatty Township to Moxie Township.
So that is going to be written in that there is no usage, only cutting in that area.
Right, correct. Yeah.
And then there was an amendment made to have responsibility for vegetative maintenance of the natural vegetation on the Kennebec River, I believe it was. Can you just specify what that amendment is going to require?
Right. So I think what the commission did there is decided that they wanted some explicit language placed in the decision document that conditions maintenance of a vegetative buffer along the Kennebec River where the proposed line would cross to ensure that the conditions that are anticipated in terms of buffering and screening will be maintained for the life of the project. And so we'll come up with the language that will ensure that's included.
Okay. And finally, your reaction to the decision today, your thoughts on this project?
I think it was a very long, thorough, exhaustive process, very objective. The commission took a lot of information into consideration, carefully sifted through, you know, thousands of documents to get to this point. At some point, the agency is responsible for making decisions, and that's what happened today.
Just to put a finer point on it, again, the decision was made based on strict LUPC statute, not necessarily taking into the full account of the other environmental ramifications that were brought up by people who oppose. You guys have seen that you have a very narrow purview and had given yourself permission not to take into account actual environmental impacts or impacts, say, on the First Nations communities in Quebec and other places in Canada. You did not consider any of those things within your purview. It was very strict looking at your statute. Is that correct?
Correct. So our scope of review is pretty limited and focused in on those PRR sub-districts, and the criteria were applied there based on the record evidence.
Anyone else?
Just out of curiosity, though, are you aware of the genocide that's taking place in the Cree and Innu people up north where their land is being flooded?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were comments in the record that that addressed that issue. So, and there were public comments submitted that are in the record that speak to that issue. The commission applied the evidence in the record with the criteria in rule and statute in the decision.
So that you would not consider that? That's not something you could consider.
I think that's a fair statement. Correct.
On Friday, January 17th, the legislature's Environment and Natural Resources Committee will hold work sessions on waste bills held over from last session. This includes LD 401, an act to preserve state landfill capacity and promote recycling. This project is a product of a longtime effort by Maine communities concerned with the repercussions of current Maine policy on trash and recycling. We spoke earlier with Hillary Lister, who has worked on Maine waste issues for a number of years.
My name is Hillary Lister, and I work with Don't Waste Me, which is a coalition of people from communities across Maine who are dealing with the effects of waste facilities, including landfills, incinerators, and sludge operations.
Welcome again to the program, Hillary. And we spoke with you a lot at the end of the last legislative session about LD 401, an act to preserve state landfill capacity and promote recycling. We've had you go in depth along with others on what this actually means for the state and its people on the ground, people and environment on the ground. But the bill is being taken up again by the Environment and Natural Resources Committee January 17th. On January 13th, on Monday, there'll be a group of communities impacted by landfills delivering a petition to the DEP. Bring us up to speed of where we are now and remind people about this LD 401 and what it could mean for folks across the state, including the Old Town Juniper Ridge landfill.
Sure. So LD 401 came about from at least 10 years now, probably 15 years now, of work between people who've been in communities that have been affected by a number of these different waste operations that turn out to be pretty tightly connected, as I said, landfills, processing facilities, incinerators, sludge operations. And what's happened in the last 15 years is Maine has steadily weakened its regulations on what's allowed for disposal in those facilities. Testing requirements have been weakened, and a number of loopholes have been enshrined in the law, especially one that defines any waste materials that are imported from surrounding states or provinces but processed in a Maine facility, then get defined as Maine-generated waste and eligible for disposal in the state-owned landfill, which is Juniper Ridge, operated by Casella on the Old Town and Elton border. There's also major pressure on also the Norwalk Waste Management-owned landfill. There's currently process to do a major expansion there, and also a sludge landfill in Heartland. There's probably, from my experience, this is more proposals to expand more facilities at one time than I'm aware of at any point in the past 15 years in Maine. And a lot of that pressure is coming from the surrounding states, which are in the process of closing landfills. There are very few approvals for new or expanded landfills in surrounding states. At this point, Massachusetts is down to a couple that are both looking to meet capacity by 2021, and Massachusetts is exporting the majority of its waste to surrounding states. Also throughout the Northeast, pretty much every New England state has enacted various bans on what materials are allowed in landfills that are much stricter than Maine's regulations. So other states are banning the disposal of sludge or construction demolition debris or PFAS-contaminated products in most of their landfills, whereas Maine has pretty open-door policy to a number of materials that in other states are either, well, those states have passed policies that mandate recycling materials that are banned from landfills, but the economics of it works out that those materials are much more cheaply handled by trucking them up to Maine and disposing them here.
Talk specifically about the hopes you have with LD 401. Again, on January 17th, the Environment and Natural Resources Committee and the legislature will be holding work sessions. You have experienced in your years working on waste policy, you've seen how powerful the waste lobby is. Talk about if you still think that there's more capacity for change than before.
I definitely think there's hope for change due to the fact that people in the communities who have been affected by this are really connecting and taking action in a variety of ways. This bill is just one way we're attempting to change policy. We also, as you mentioned, have a petition for rule change to also address the definition of Maine-generated waste, and also to require that the department take into consideration impacts on environmental justice when licensing landfills. Again, this is something that surrounding states already do. They need to look at if they're going to license or expand a waste facility, if it's going to have a disproportionate impact on a community of people who is are already being impacted negatively by the health environmental impacts of these operations.
And in this case, we'd be referring, as we have before, to the impacts of the Juniper Ridge landfill on the Penobscot River and consequently the Penobscot Nation.
Definitely that. And also, if you're looking at some of the other waste facilities, again, it's generally, well, consistently low-income communities, communities of people who have disproportionate levels of health impacts as a result of this. And it's something that federally has been urged for states to really adopt. Maine originally had an environmental justice director. It doesn't seem like they have maintained that role. So we're just trying to bring this into something that they have to look at, especially when determining public benefit, which is required prior to them approving any landfills, either new ones or expansions. And in the past, when we've tried to bring up issues of environmental justice as part of the public benefit determination, the department, the state has responded that that's not a criteria that they need to consider. So this would put that into the consideration.
So again, you're looking at two tracks here. One, it's is petitioning the Department of Environmental Protection to amend its rules to provide an accurate definition of Maine-generated waste and to require consideration of impacts on environmental justice when determining the public benefit of licensing landfills. I'm quoting your organization here. And then we have the LD 401, again, an act to preserve state landfill capacity and promote recycling, a bill that is up for work session before the Environment and Natural Resources Committee on Friday. Hillary, in the couple minutes we have left, can you just parse that out a little bit more and how people that you know will be involved in both these processes, or if they want to become more involved, can?
Sure. So on the work session on this bill, the legislature is going to vote on basically whether to keep this bill alive and do more work on it. There's a lot of pressure on them right now to get rid of as many bills as possible, just in part to meet the session schedule, but there's also serious lobbying against this bill, primarily from Casella and associated industries that are concerned that by having clarifying the definition of Maine waste, that that would have negative impact on their ability to operate in a way that really requires importing these large amounts of waste in the state. And part of what we're looking for is just to be able to track this, test it, know where the leachate from under the landfills is being disposed, how much is being disposed, what's in it. Right now, there's so little tracking or information about what's actually coming in and where it's going. So this bill, it's rather broad bill, but it's trying to address what has been over a decade of compounding problems from some issues in Maine waste policy that have favored certain industries at the expense of the local communities where they're located, and also at the expense of smaller businesses, as this has really concentrated control of all waste and recycling in Maine within a couple companies.
Do you anticipate, or can you even guess at this point, which direction the committee may go?
I really don't know for sure. It's really going to be helpful if committee members hear from people who are in their districts, and we're posting information about that on our blog. It needs to be updated. It should be within the next couple of days, and that is don'twasteme.wordpress.com.
Finish your thoughts on the bill, then talk about what the process is you're looking forward to with this petition to the Department of Environmental Protection.
Sure. So for the bill, really just trying to get across that this is something that it's an opportunity for lawmakers to really start to solve some of these problems that have been ignored now for over a decade. And the petition is really trying to urge the department to take action on this. And the department has actually indicated that they want to take action, tighten up the definition of Maine waste, tighten up the definition of recycling, so materials that are ending up in a landfill aren't counting towards the state's recycling goals. So these are things which is a nice change from where we were 10 years ago. The goals of people in the communities that are dealing with these facilities and the department itself have a lot more in common, and hoping through this petition process we may be able to address it through that route as well.
Hillary Lister, thanks for joining us again on WERU, and we look forward to following up with you in the near future.
Thank you.
And you have been listening to Radioactive, an environmental and social justice news journal. Today's program was produced with the Sunlight Media Collective, including Don Neptune Adams, Maria Gerard, and Meredith DeFrancesco. You can listen to archives of this and other locally produced public affairs programming at WERU.org.